My brother Tom kicked up one of my character defects when he suggested that I not just go on and on tonight. Gently reminded me, you know, 7:30, wrap it up. We got a lot of people here, and I'm sitting here and during the. No, not at all. I'm actually grateful for it. It's a character defect I've become aware of. Other people, like a lot of character defects that we walk around with, other people know long before we do that we have it. And what I'm talking about is the incessant desire to talk about myself. Now, when I became aware of how much I have that defect, I just want to talk about me. And I'm not really willing to talk about you a lot of times, but I'm willing to listen to you talk about you a little bit. Try to hustle you along. Try to fix you real quick so we can get to, you know, more important topics, like me. My sponsor just loves laughing at me with this stuff. And the funny thing was, I thought, okay, well, here's this serious character defect that I've uncovered in my inventory. Not just talking about myself, but thinking about myself and just the self-centeredness in general. And our book is clear that this is the root of all the troubles that I have in all of my relationships with everybody I've ever met, is I'm just so damn interested in me. And so I figured, well, you know, the seventh step, I'm going to humbly ask God to remove this. And God's going to remove it, and I won't have to do that anymore. I won't have to, like, you know, just drive people nuts talking about myself all the time and thinking about myself all the time. And it hasn't gotten removed entirely. It has in large measure. I am much more interested in the nine-step promises. It talks about we will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. And I am genuinely interested now in my fellows. I want to hear what's going on with other people. Carol shared some wonderful news with me in the kitchen tonight, and I got to talk to my friend Peter last week about some wonderful developments in his week. And I actually, like, not only do I hear things now, I remember them. I remember who told me what, and that's one of the blessings of waking up a little bit to the fact that there's other people here on the planet. But my sponsor laid out for me this deal in the seventh step. He said that, you know, if you look at the seventh step prayer that's in our book, God, I am now willing that you should have all of me, the good and the bad, and I pray that you remove from me every defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. So the prayer is pretty specific. I'm asking, remove anything that's in the way of me being useful to my fellows. The prayer is not remove the things I don't like. The prayer isn't remove the things that make me uncomfortable. The prayer is remove the things that are in the way. And when I said to John, you know, I'm still talking about myself and thinking about myself an awful lot, he says, well, so is everybody else on the planet. And the nice thing right now about what's happening with you, Jim, is that this character defect of talking about yourself has been coupled with this newfound ability to tell the truth when you talk about yourself. So it's no longer this nice, shiny, polished, I'm doing great, and look how great I'm doing. Don't you think I'm awesome? I think I'm awesome. Don't you think I'm awesome? Let's talk about how awesome I am. You know, it's not that anymore. I'll tell you, you know, I was a fall-down drunk. I pissed on everything that God had blessed me with. And he turned around and he blessed me with it again. I don't deserve any of it. It's been a gift to be given this stuff back. And I still have this tendency to selfishness and self-centeredness today. I would like to be Lily White. I heard a guy... some of you might have heard of someone named Paul O, who wrote the story in our book. It used to be called Dr. Alcoholic Addict. It's got that passage in it, acceptance is the answer to all my problems now. And he had written an article for the Grapevine some years ago about the seventh step that just revolutionized my attitude towards my own shortcomings. And in that article, he said, you know, when I go to bed at night, I tell God the truth. I want to be perfect when I wake up tomorrow. Get rid of all this crap. I want all of my defects and all of my shortcomings and all of my flaws and failures. I want it all removed. I want to walk out tomorrow pure as snow. But I understand that the deal is you're only going to remove the things that are in the way of my being useful. And I trust you have a better idea about that than I do, of what's useful and what's not. So when I wake up tomorrow, whoever I am when I wake up, whatever's left, I will try to treat all of it as if it's a blessing, good and bad. Maybe there's a reason why you left me that way for that day. And I thought, wow, that's an interesting idea, that, you know, maybe even some of my shortcomings, maybe some of my difficulties might still be useful. And I went to my sponsor with that. I said, how can shortcomings and flaws be useful? He says, Jim, if you ever get as perfect as you used to think you were, we wouldn't be able to stand you. We need you to remain human. We need you to remain just like everybody else here, with shortcomings, with flaws, with mistakes, with weaknesses, because that's what makes it possible for other alcoholics to relate to you. I've got to be able to talk about my drinking, what happens when I start to drink, what happens in my mind before that first drink, and be able to identify with other alcoholics in that way and help other people identify their alcoholism. But I also have to be able to identify still as a sober member of AA that I'm not perfect, that I still make mistakes. That makes it possible for me to be one among many. As long as I think, okay, now, you know, God's going to remove all this stuff and I'm going to be all better. And the minute that I think I'm going to be all better, then I start thinking I'm going to be all better than you. And I don't need to go there anymore. And that's a good thing for a guy like me. So I said that seven-step prayer after I had taken that quiet hour. I'd finished my fifth step with my sponsor and had taken that quiet hour, and I took the book down from the shelf and I looked, and am I entirely ready? And I found I was entirely ready to have this stuff removed. I can't think of a time in anybody's life that you would be more ready to be changed than on the heels of admitting every single twist of character, every nook and cranny to another human being and to God and to yourself. I mean... Do you think you're going to be more willing tomorrow? You know, when the memory of that experience starts to fade a little bit? I mean, I was as ready as I could be. I'd written the inventory over a series of weeks, couple of months, but I had read it all in a day, out loud to another human being. I could see it all. It wasn't pretty. I was never going to be more ready, and I sat and I made sure there was nothing that I had intentionally left out. I found out later there were things I hadn't remembered, but I had not skimped over anything on purpose. And I said that prayer that I shared with you a minute ago from our book, and my sponsor told me, as soon as you say that prayer, give me a call. We got to start step eight. My sponsor doesn't monkey around with me with this stuff, and I'm glad, because my life depends upon my having a spiritual awakening as a result of the 12 steps. And I don't. If somebody said to you, you know, your life depends upon A, B, and C happening. We're going to do A and B now, and C we'll do, you know, down the road sometime. You'd probably get a little disturbed. Say, why can't we do C now? Why do I have to wait to do any of it? My sponsor said to me, as soon as you finish a step, we go on to the next one. When you finish that, we go on to the next one. I called him when I said the seven-step prayer. I said, I just said the prayer. He said, great. He said, let's take a look at the eighth step. When we looked at the short version that we keep on our window shades here, and that's on page 59 of our big book, and we looked at the paragraph that's in our big book describing looking at this list, realizing that the list that we made based on our inventory was probably incomplete, because that list was based on resentment and fear and some conduct stuff and sex conduct stuff like that. And there might be other people that have been harmed also, and I might want to give it another pass through looking at my life. Anybody else I can think of that I had harmed. And I made that list, and my sponsor pointed out to me, it says all in the eighth step. Twice. Not even just once. Made a list of all persons we had harmed. And became willing to make amends to them all. And I thought, whoa. Now, I've heard some people say, well, you know, you wait until they come back into your life. My sponsor had a different philosophy. He said to me, no, you're not going to wait for them to come find you. You're going to go find them. You probably went out of your way to hurt people. You're going to go out of your way to help them, to heal from the things that you had done to them. I'm curious what's going to come up tonight. I've got a lot of just fantastic experiences that I've been blessed with that, around making amends, and I was sorting through them earlier and deciding which one I was going to pick to, you know, impress you with, and my mind's blank right now, so which is good, because that means I'm not going to pick, you know, something else is going to pick, so we'll see what comes up. I was just looking at eighth step stuff today with a guy that I'm working with, that this is where he is on his journey. And we had looked at some of the financial stuff, that most alcoholics have money problems. And I can remember reading through the nine-step stuff with my sponsor in the big book, and it hits on so many different situations, you know, with an enemy, with a friend, with a money problem, with a criminal problem, with domestic problems, you know, all these different things, and all these and some basic principles, a loving and forgiving spirit, and making sure that when I go to people, that my manner is calm and frank and open. I'm not, oh, I gotta talk to you. He also told me that I wasn't to tell people I was sorry. That a guy like me has probably worn that phrase out, used it more than three human beings worth. I don't get to say that phrase anymore. What I get to do is look you in the eye and tell you I was wrong. When he told me that, I said, no, I'd much rather say I'm sorry. And I'm a guy who never wanted to say I was sorry. He says, no, you get to say I was wrong and I mistreated you. I think I caused you harm and this is what I did. Lay out the stuff. When we got to the financial stuff, I had back taxes that I owed. I had just about every employer I ever had I had stolen from. Some out of the register, some by fudging on my timesheets and writing down hours that I hadn't really worked, and sometimes just taking a full week's pay for much less than a full week's work. And my sponsor said to me, well, if they're paying you for doing 40 hours on that salaried job and you really only work 30 hours, what's the deal with that other 10 hours? And I tried to dance around it in the conversation for a few minutes and finally admitted that maybe, possibly, sort of, I didn't really, kind of, really, really mostly earn it. And my sponsor cuts through that. He says, so you stole it. Yep, I did. I accepted money that I didn't earn under false pretenses. That's theft in my book. Made a list of all that stuff. Took a look at it. Tens of thousands of dollars. At the time, I was living in a $500 a month apartment in upstate New York, and I was making about 19 grand a year. And I owed tens of thousands of dollars. I owed almost twice as much what I was making a year. And I said to my sponsor, there's no way I'm paying this stuff back. Do this. And then when he said, well, let's just start small. Let's just take a look. You know, what's one that you could do now? Let's just try to get started. And I hemmed and hawed and everything. And finally, he said to me, Jim, what's the problem? And he had been clear with me in the eighth step in our big book. It doesn't say we wait for the willingness. It says we ask for the willingness. We pray for the willingness until it comes. That if I'm not willing to make an amends, I don't just sit around and hope someday I'll want to do it. I'm supposed to pray every single day. God, I don't want to do this. That's the truth. But help me be willing. Help me be willing. And one night I'm talking to John, and he knows I'm dragging my feet. And he says, have you been praying? And I said, yeah. And he says, have you been asking for willingness? I said, yeah. And he says, you're still not willing? I said, no. He says, well, that's strange. He says, usually when you pray for willingness, you get it. He says, what is it about this that you don't want to do? God, I don't want to give him my money. And he said, oh, well, I can help you with that. I said, you can? He says, yep, you don't have to give him any of your money. I said, now, wait a minute. Now, this is the guy that has said to me that if I were thorough with all this stuff, I could be free of a fatal illness. And that if I wasn't thorough, I might be doing that at the risk of my own life. So I said, what? So I don't have to give them my money, but then I'll go drink and die? He said, no. He says, you don't have to give them a dime of your money and you can live in peace the rest of your life. I said, really? How do I do that? He says, you give them their money. Oh. And just like that, I had the willingness. I had the wrong idea in my head. I wasn't living in the middle of the truth. I was living in an idea of the truth that I have to give them my money. When he said that to me, he brought me into the middle of the truth. It is their money. It has always been their money. I stole it from them. And every time I earn money and don't send some to them, I steal it again. Every paycheck that I get for the rest of my life, if I don't make efforts to pay back the people I stole it from, I am consciously deciding, here's their money again, and I'm going to spend it on me. Again. If that just ruined your next paycheck for you, you can thank me later. Took an ATM card from a young girl when I was an undergrad in college up in Oswego. And I had no idea what her name was. I was doing walk-in burglaries in a dormitory. 3 o'clock in the morning, I would come back from the bars, and I'd know my drinking was always about supply. And I always drank to the end of my supply. And 3 in the morning, I'm back and I'm broke and I know I need money for tomorrow. And I would go into a dormitory 10 stories high and I would, 3 in the morning, and I would start walking along trying doorknobs. And I went into the dorm where there was, instead of single rooms, there were suites. So when you first walked in the door off the hallway, there was a lounge room and then there were a couple rooms off of that. And I wasn't stupid. I would try the doorknob and if it was unlocked, I would open it and step in. Like this. And if anybody was sitting there watching TV, making out, whatever, and said, who the hell are you? I'd say, is this 402? And they'd say, no, this is 602, idiot. You're on the wrong floor. And I'd say, sorry. And I'd close the door. And if nobody was there, I'd go through wallets and pocketbooks. I can talk to you about this now because I think I found every single person that I hit. At least every single one that reported the theft to the campus police department. Because I talked to my sponsor about it. He says, you know any of these people's names? I said, no. He says, well, how might you find them? And I gave that some thought, and I said, maybe they filed reports. He said, are you willing to go talk to the people that could help you straighten this out? That was a weird way to describe the people that could lock my ass up. The people who could help you straighten this out. It was like, that's a nice euphemism there for the people that could lock me up. And I got to tell you, anybody that wants to listen to it afterwards, I saved this voicemail. Chief of Police for Oswego Campus Security. I still have the voicemail. She returned my call. I had called and talked to the previous chief of police, and he helped me find out how much. I'd hit up a bunch of vending machines, too. I'd stolen over $400 in quarters out of vending machines and arcade games on the campus, in the campus center. It's hard to drink with quarters. You jingle a lot. I had friends calling me Mr. Jingles for a little while at that stage of my drinking career. And when I called this guy and I told him my name and I told him I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm trying to straighten out some messes from my past, and I'd done some financial harm to some institutions and some individuals and on his campus. And this was 17 years later. And when I told him what I had done, some of the things I had done, I told him about the vending machine and stealing the set of keys out of a truck and all this stuff. He said, "You realize I could send somebody right now, pick you up, and right?" And I said, "Yeah, I do, sir. But you don't have to do that. If you need to see me in person, I'll come and see you." Now, I had talked with my sponsor about this. I had already gotten consent from people that might be affected by my getting arrested. Our book is clear about that. If other people are going to be affected by me making an amends, I got to get their consent first, and I had gotten that. So he said, "Give me your phone number, and I'm going to have to do a little research, get back to you." So I gave him my phone number, and I hung up the phone, and like 10 seconds later, my phone rings, and I pick it up. "Hello? Is this Jim?" "Yeah." He says, "Wow, you gave me the right number." I said, "Yeah." He says, "You're really serious about this?" I said, "Yeah." He said, all right, I'll call you back." He called me back a few days later, and he had one of his deputies do some research back through their files. He found out they had done an investigation when I busted into these machines and everything, and he knew an approximate amount. And I didn't have a lot of money at the time, and I said, "Look, I've got a bunch of other things I'm trying to straighten out too, and I've set up a budget, and I can send you $20 a month forever until this is paid off." And he said, "Oh, Christ, don't nickel and dime me to death, please." He says, "Listen, if that's what you got to do, put the $20 aside every month. And when you've got it all, send it to me." So by the time I got it all together, and it didn't take as long as I thought, because strange principle here, and I'm not the only one that's experienced this, once I started making my financial amends and I let money flow out, money flowed in. My income doubled in 6 months. And I hear other people saying, "Yup, too," so that's probably happened to them, too. Simple principle of currency, something flowing. Currency is like a current, supposed to flow. If you want to flow in, you have to let it flow out. That's just a law of physics. It's a spiritual law, too, I found out. So here I am, I call up, and I've got this money together, and he's retired, and this woman, Cindy, and she says, "Oh, yeah, I left her a voicemail," and she left me one back saying, I pulled the files, I've read the reports, I fully approve of what you're doing, I am honored and happy to help you straighten this out and get in touch with me." And when I called her, she told me where to send this money and where to send that money, and then asked me if I could, if I'd be willing to come to Oswego and talk to students there, because they have some people there on their campus that have an alcohol problem. Can you believe that? On a college campus? An alcohol problem. And would I be willing to do that? And right away, my ego was like, "Yeah, I'm like Superman, you know, Super AA. I'll go up there." And I call my sponsor, and he says, "How far away is that?" I was like, "It's like 3 hours." He goes, "Call local AA and have someone local up there do that. You don't need your ego getting all blown up on a 3-hour drive going up there. Keep your head home, but be helpful. Help her get in touch with local AA and let the folks that are actually going to be living in that town with those drunks help those drunks. You don't need to go up there and impress them and leave." But okay, so I did that. But the one that I really loved was this ATM card that I got. And there was a PIN number taped to it. And I thought, you know what? It's like Darwinism, you know? It's like Survival of the fittest. You tape your PIN number to your ATM card. I think that's like the universe saying, you know, you have to lose your money now. You know, and I justified that forever. Now, she didn't leave her ATM, you know, in my pocket. I had to go and burglarize her dorm room and take it out of her purse. You know, so, you know, I'm always trying to put blame for my behavior on other people, but I did that. I went into her dorm room, I went into her purse and her wallet, and I took that out. And I cleaned that out for about $350. And the first chief of police, that was the one thing I was able to do with him. I had gotten a bit of a windfall, and somebody had owed me some money, $350, and had given it to me at the same moment that I'm like, the same day I'm trying to straighten this stuff out with this credit card, this ATM card. And so that first chief, I had said to him, well, I am able to take care of that one. And he said, well, he says, I can't give you her contact information. He says, but let me get in touch with her. He says, I got a report here. Let me see if I can find her. And I can't even give you her name, because I didn't remember her name, but he had it in the report. He says, I can't even give you that. But he got back to me. He says, I did find her. He says, she's still in New York State. She's not in the town anymore, but she's still here in New York. And he says, if you will send me a money order made out just to cash, I will send it along to her. I said, okay. And talked to my sponsor, and he said, look, she probably doesn't want contact with you, doesn't want you to be able to get in touch with her blindly, you know, directly, but why don't you send an honest letter laying out what you would say to her if you could see her face-to-face, and send that along with the money order in an unsealed envelope and a note to the chief of police that if he would take a look at that letter and if he thought it was all right to forward it, would he please do that? And he did that. And I included my phone number and my email address if she needed to get in touch with me, because sometimes I've done harm beyond what I think I've done. And I don't know that unless the person is kind enough to enlighten me. She was kind enough. She got in touch with me. Got an email from her. A couple weeks later, saying that she'd gotten the money order and thanking me for it, and she was surprised that someone would show remorse and yada yada. So, some really kind, nice things. Made it sound like I was this really decent guy instead of this, you know, thief that had burglarized her dorm room. And at the end, she said, I've been wondering, why would somebody want to straighten out something like this after all this time? And I called my sponsor. I call my sponsor a lot about this kind of stuff. I don't recommend freelance amends. It's a wonderful path to walk. If you haven't walked this path yet, please don't miss it. But don't hog it all to yourself. Have someone to share the stories with that you can talk to. And I called him up and I said, I got this email and I read it to him. And we were both just so touched by the kindness in it. And he says, you know, she asked you a question. Why? Why don't you tell her why? So I had her email address now. Her name was Mary. So I wrote back to her and told her I was an alcoholic and I was trying to straighten out some messes and been living a selfish, self-centered life for most of my life, and realizing that I'd had a terrible impact on a lot of people, and if there was anything else I'd done to her, you know, any other impact that taking this money had had or anything else I'd done, let me know. And she wrote back and she said, she goes, in between getting the money and sending you the email, I called my old college roommate. She used to be one of my best friends. I had been convinced for 17 years she had taken that money. But I got in touch with her, and we're talking now. I let her know what you did, and I let her know what my suspicions had been, and I apologized, and we're in touch again. When you took that money, when you took the ATM, I had to deal with the fact that that was my book money for the semester, and I had to call my parents. And by the time they were able to get the money together and get it up to me, we were already 2 weeks into the semester, and I was behind, and my grades suffered. And my relationship with my parents suffered. My father thought that I was terribly irresponsible to lose my ATM card, leave it around or whatever, and all this stuff. Sometimes I have no idea the effect I have on the world. But she also got to let me know a different kind of effect I get to have on the world now. She said, and I really appreciate you sending me this money now, because my ex-husband split on me and my two boys about 6 months ago. He's a drunk. And I had been promising my sons a camping trip this summer. And just before I had gotten your letter, I was trying to figure out a way to let them know there'd be no camping trip this year. But now my boys are going camping. So I get to be an agent of that stuff. I was an agent of self. My agendas and what I want for most of my life. And for just a few short years now, I get to be an agent of something else. Something far bigger than me. something that's able to bring me into that kind of kindness and that kind of forgiveness. That's kind for her to share all that with me. She didn't have to do that. You know, and to share that with someone that had done nothing but bring harm into your life, to take the time to respond to me that way. And that's been my experience with other things that have happened to me too, and I'd be happy to talk with you and hear your stories. I think I've talked about myself enough tonight. So thanks so much for your time.